We have already considered together Matthew 24 in another context. And there we saw that in Matthew 24, Jesus talks about the preaching of the gospel to all the world, and then the end will come. And in his last commission to the disciples, Jesus said very clearly, "Go and teach all nations and baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit." Now that statement, "Go teach all nations," how must it have sounded to a zealous Jew, to a real Pharisee? "Go teach all nations." Very strange. Because of this wall that existed between the Gentiles and the Jews. All nations means all Gentiles, you know. That's really what it means. How can we compare it with today? It's like Jesus would send us out today and says, "Go and teach all denominations, all churches. Go and teach all churches." We would say, "Oh boy, what task has he given us here?" We have enough to do with ourselves, and now we go and teach all other churches. What kind of job has he given us here? Can you imagine how that must have sounded? "Go and teach all nations." Now we tend to look at this text, "Go teach all nations," in the context, yes, the gospel will be preached over all the world. We think in global terms. And we think, wonderful, that's a commission, that's a promise. But it's more than a promise, it's a challenge. To teach all nations means go and break down walls that exist between you and the Samaritans, between you and the Phoenicians, between you and the Greeks, between you and the Romans, between you and the Egyptians. Break down these barriers. Go and teach them. When Jesus said, "Begin in Jerusalem," later in this commission he said, "and begin in Jerusalem." This, of course, was also a challenge, but it was easier. You know, that was the own people. But go and teach all nations. And this is exactly what Sister White is referring to in that statement here. But the command, "Go ye into all the world," is not to be lost sight of. We are called upon to lift our eyes to the regions beyond. Christ tears away the wall of partition, the dividing prejudice of nationality, and teaches a love for all the human family. He lifts men from the narrow circle which their selfishness prescribes. He abolishes all territorial lines and artificial distinctions of society. He makes no difference between neighbors and strangers, friends and enemies. He teaches us to look upon every needy soul as our brother and the world as our field. So let us think a little bit about differences here and where there might be hindrances or lines in our time. Sorry for this. Now, I wonder if I find it again. Yes. First, the first wall mentioned here is prejudice of nationality. We first write down all the walls. That's the first wall, which Jesus came to break down. Then the second wall, selfishness. The narrow circle which selfishness prescribes. Then all territorial lines. Then artificial distinctions of society. What are artificial distinctions of society? Or let's begin with, what are prejudices of nationality? Do we have this? Yes? Where? How? But we don't have this, do we?
We don't.
Where?
We have no transit before, have we?
You know, all the Americans, they're a little bit funny. We Germans, we know how how to handle situations, but the Americans... And the Americans say, the Germans, they're a little bit stubborn, you know. And, you know, the Romanians, they are all of the same class. They're a little bit strange. And Australians, you know, isn't there a sort of thinking of that, that is natural. We have our peculiarities. When I grew up as a child, we had Yugoslavians coming to our church, the Adventist church, and they got an extra meeting place and everything. And whenever you went there, everything smelled like garlic. The whole place smelled like garlic. That was the Yugoslavians. The peculiarity. And they stayed for themselves. They invited themselves and they stayed for themselves, and the Germans stayed with themselves. There was a clear distinction, even though we had the same faith. It's interesting, isn't it? And there are prejudices of nationality. We have to realize this. We are different to some degree, aren't we? And we have to learn to appreciate one another. I really must say, Germans and Americans, I wrote down, because I made this diagram in America. Here I would write down Germans and Australians to bring the thing home. Well, I really must say that God has blessed me very much with that fact that He put me all over the world and I had to deal with all kinds of people. It is a great blessing, really. And the first time I came to Africa, I really must say I had a strong prejudice of nationality. And I began, as I saw the African believers, how they have the same faith and the same struggles, and yet have a superiority in many respects as far as experience is concerned, I really began to appreciate them. And that helped me to overcome this. And then I went back in the aeroplane on the way back. That was one time when I came from the islands, and tourists were in this aeroplane. And then they were talking. Oh, I thought, I'm ashamed to be a German. I'm really ashamed when I heard them talk. You know, how superior they were towards everybody else from where they came to. I thought, if they only knew how nice these people are, if they only would know this, but they even didn't get to know it because they wouldn't come down to their level, not one time. And the same, of course, exists with other situations and with other nations. Prejudices of nationality are there in the world. There's no question about it. However, in a world that is more and more globalized, also, there are some barriers that are broken down. But still, we have to be aware of these things. Good, the narrow circle that selfishness prescribes, what could this be? Neighbors and strangers. Neighbors we know. With neighbors we get along very well, but as soon as a stranger comes, that is an uncertainty. Who knows who this stranger is? Who knows what kind of peculiarities he has, what he will bring into our community? When I was a child again, my parents moved from North Germany to South Germany. And you wouldn't believe how different the cultures are. The language is different, I mean the slang in the language is different. Habits are different, religion is different. North Germany is more Protestant, South Germany is more Catholic, and many things were very different. So suddenly, I came from a known environment into an unknown environment. And the situation was very strange, and they used a certain word which used the word stranger. So I was literally a stranger. So I know how it is when you come into that situation. Then, friends and enemies. Do we make a distinction between friends and enemies? Certainly. This is my problem, I really must say. And I built walls here, and I would say that walls in many respects are justified, because enemies are also often enemies of the truth, and we don't want to have this influence. On the other hand, can we really understand that Jesus broke down walls between friends and enemies? But that's the very statement here. Look at this. He makes no difference between neighbors and strangers, friends and enemies. That's something, isn't it? He makes no difference between friends and enemies. Now, what do you say to this? Do we make a difference between friends and enemies? Sure. I really must say, that speaks to me. It shows me that I definitely have built walls which Jesus needs to break down, for sure. He made no difference between friends and enemies. In other words, go and teach all nations. Again, I want to say that there's another wall which needs to be erected, and I want to come back to this a little later. Another thing, family member and not family member.
Yeah.
Fun? Relative or stranger? Family member, not family. In some countries or some places, we do have only one family that are in the message. And this family often consists of brother and brother and brother and brother and sister, and the mother who is the matriarch, or the father who is the patriarch. Sometimes they don't live anymore. So they are all together with their children, three generations, and they make up a church. Now, another brother comes, who is one from the world for some reason. He comes to the church, but he always stands outside. The family members understand each other very well, but this is a stranger, you know, he's from outside. He is never invited to lunch after the meetings. He's never invited to nature walk. That's all within the family. They invite each other very often, but not this one. So he always feels as though he's not really a member of that church. What will be the result? He will become very lonely after a while. He must be very strong to remain firm. And I've seen how people actually went away because they got no hold in that church. The family was too closed. There were real walls around this family. So national pride and family pride are going very closely together very often. That's the narrow circle which selfishness prescribes, isn't it? We have to
like
think
mafia.
About this.
Like
a clique. A clique. What is a clique? That are people who stay together on the cost of others. That's the point. It's not just people who click together, but they have some secrets which they don't tell others, but they are sinful secrets. So it's like the mafia, as you say. With you young people, it's called a clique. It's not the mafia yet, but it's a clique. Then we have church member and not church member. Did Jesus make a distinction between church member and not church member?
No.
It's interesting, isn't it? Then, white, not sister white, but white and
black.
Or colored, yeah. Also, another distinction. Territorial lines. What are artificial distinctions of society? Men and women, for example. Rich and poor. Learned and unlearned. High and low. You know, he has a position, therefore you always have to look up to him. But he has no position, you have to look down upon him. That is an artificial distinction of society. Then educated and uneducated, and as I said already, child and adult, men and women, and so forth. Now, there, or young people and old people, there's also a wall, isn't there, between young people and old people. And Jesus came to break these things down. When he said, go teach all nations, he included all people. All these distinctions, all this wall must be broken down if we want to reach the world. That's for sure. It's not just between Gentiles and Jews. You see, we have the same problem as they had. Now, what do we do when we are in the position of a Gentile? Here is the Commonwealth of Israel. Here is the people of God. They understand each other very well. And here am I, the poor Gentile, and they don't invite me for lunch. I had this experience once in North England, in Scotland better, and we spent the Sabbath or a Sabbath morning in a church which had only a few members, more or less just the minister and us as visitors and an elderly lady. And when he was finished with his sermon, we had no home to go to because we were on tour, except the youth hostel, and the youth hostel was closed over the day. So we had no lunch, no place to stay, nothing, and we thought, oh, it would be nice if this minister could invite us. After all, we are the only visitors here. And the woman wanted to do this, but the minister said, no, no. We were rather disappointed. Now, what do you do when you stand outside? Here, I'm not invited. Shall we then become angry? You see, the point is, we then build up walls, don't we? We build walls. We think, he should have invited us. He should have done this, he should have done this, and we build up the walls. The best that we could have done probably was to invite the minister to come out with us in nature a little. Or some, you know, something. And as I said before, I felt that the judge, the story I told you yesterday, I felt that the judge had a prejudice against me until I discovered that I had a prejudice against him. That was my problem. I had built a wall against him, and it was time that I broke down this wall. And as I began to break down the wall, I realized that he was not as I thought he was before. He found it very easy to break down the walls on his side. But you see, we have to go the first step to break down walls. And I will read a story to you about the breaking down of walls that is very interesting. Okay. That is in Testimonies, Volume 9, page 191 and 192. Years ago, when the company of believers in the soon coming of Christ was very small, the Sabbath keepers at Topsen, Maine, met for worship in the large kitchen of the home of Brother Stockbridge Holland. One Sabbath morning, Brother Holland was absent. We were surprised at this because he was always so punctual. Soon he came in, his face aglow, shining with glory of God. "Brethren," he said, "I've found it. I have found the way we can pursue a course acting regarding which the guarantee of God's word is, ye shall never fall. I'm going to tell you about it." He then told us that he had noticed that one brother, a poor fisherman, you see a line of distinction here immediately, don't you? Artificial distinction of society, a poor fisherman, had been feeling that he was not as highly respected as he ought to be, and that Brother Holland and others thought themselves above him. This was not true, but it seemed true to him. And for several weeks, he had not attended the meetings. So Brother Holland went to his house and knelt before him, saying, "My brother, forgive me, what is it that I have done?" The man took him by the arm and tried to raise him to his feet. "No," said Brother Holland, "what have you against me?" "I've nothing against you." "But you must have," said Brother Holland, "because once we could speak with one another, but now you do not speak to me at all, and I want to know what is the matter." "Get up, Brother Holland," he said. "No," Brother Holland said, "I will not." "Then I must get down," he said, and he fell on his knees and confessed how childish he had been and how many evil surmisings he had cherished, and now, he said, "I will put them all away." Can you see the walls broke down here? Now, who was breaking down the walls? Jesus. Right? Jesus was breaking down the walls. But how did he do it? He worked through those who were willing. That was, first of all, Brother Holland. He needed to take the first step. And Brother Holland was insistent. He said, "I don't go." And I mean, you can't always do it this way. With this, I don't want to say that this is the method always to be used, but it's the spirit that is always to be used. That's the point, you see. And on the side of the fisherman, there was also a breaking down of walls. He said, "Then I must come down to you." And he confessed how childish he had been. And that is childish. To build these walls is childish, really. And Jesus wants that these walls are away. As Brother Holland told the story, his face shone with the glory of the Lord. Just as he had finished, the fisherman and his family came in, and we had an excellent meeting. No walls were there. So in our meetings, there must be a breaking down of walls. Now, I really must say that from the time that we began to study this, there was a breaking down of walls. In some camp meetings, more even than in others. But in every camp meeting so far, there was a breaking down of walls that had existed for a long, long time. And I can really say this message has power. In Ukraine, for example, where I had not suspected any walls because the people there are very simple, very dedicated, and so forth, but still there were walls. And we had meetings within the church groups. In one of these meetings I was, and it was just amazing how these walls broke down. There was a true spirit of confession, a true spirit of love there, which brought the believers together in a closeness as never before. And this is something that we need, wherever these walls are. And the problem is we hide these walls, you know. They are there, but we hide them, carefully cover them, so that, no, we don't have any problem, do we? Certainly not. But once, you know, sometimes requires the right word at the right time to bring out this problem. And some people have the talent to do this. How shall I say, to step on other people's toe. In other words, they have the talent to bring out that problem that is there. And I have learned that when a problem comes out, not to despair, but it's good. I've learned to say thank you, that's good. Now it's, you know, when a physician works and a wound is covered, let's say pus is in the wound and it's covered, it's working and working and boiling and boiling and becoming greater and greater. What do? You take a needle and punch, which is painful, absolutely painful. But it's good, because now the pus comes out. Now you say, oh, all this dirt comes off. What's in there? Terrible, what have you done with the needles thing? But it's good, it comes out. It needs to come out so that walls can be broken down. So it's very unpleasant when such a situation like this occurs, what we read here of Brother Holland and the fisherman. It's very unpleasant. For the fisherman, it was very unpleasant. You can imagine this. But it led to a real victory. Also for Brother Holland, it was unpleasant. But it led to a real victory. And so when the evil of our nature comes out in our meetings, and we get very upset at times, that may be not very pleasant, but if we are willing to be corrected, then the end result will be a good one. And then we can thank the Lord that these things came out. So, that is breaking down of the walls of artificial distinction of society, territorial lines, selfishness, prejudice of nationality. Now, I want to go a little bit further in this study before we enter into the experience of the disciples. I want to read with you a statement from the chapter, Who is the Greatest? But let's turn first to Mark 9, verse 33 and 34. That is the text here. I've copied it here. But maybe we can open the text itself. Then Jesus came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What was it you disputed among yourselves on the road?" But they kept silent, for on the road they had disputed among themselves who would be the greatest. Now, can you see in the story of Brother Holland and the poor fisherman that this was the problem? This question, who is the greatest? Can you see it there? It's difficult to see because the poor fisherman never wanted to be the greatest, did he? He just wanted to be accepted. Or? Well, the problem of the poor fisherman, and that is a problem that many of us have, is he was thinking in terms of position. Up there, down there. Up here, down here. You see? In other words, it's like somebody would come to our church and would say, well, they up there. You know, these people who make the decisions, they are up there and we are down here. And that's the category in which the poor fisherman thought in terms of levels. It's like a caste, you know. The caste of the clergy who can determine, who know everything, and the caste of the normal people. Do such things really exist in God's church? And where they would exist, they would be artificial, made by men, unjustified. There is no such thing. The minister is on the same level as the people. Absolutely. There's no artificial distinction between both. And yet, the poor fisherman thought it was. And he felt on being in the lower position. And really his desire was on the higher position. So his quest was, who is the greatest? That was his quest. Who is the greatest? I want to be the greatest, of course. And because I'm not the greatest, because they don't respect me, because they don't let me to be the greatest, therefore I don't go there anymore. That was his attitude. And I really found that in practically all of the difficulties we have with one another, this question comes up again and again. Who is the greatest? You wouldn't believe that. We don't say that, we don't ask this question directly. I've never heard any one of us, or today, saying, I really want to be the greatest. Well, in one instance, somebody said, I want to be among the top 10 of the church. Yes, he said this. I always was on the top, wherever I went, and I would get there. But finally he left the church. He didn't become one of the top 10. It's sad, isn't it? That I won't tell you who this was. It was nobody from Australia. So, the situation is really that normally we don't ask directly the question, I want to be the greatest, and yet it is there in the heart. And indirectly it comes out. And in the poor fisherman it was there. But why don't we say it directly? Because we are ashamed, aren't we? We would never say, I want to be the greatest. Because as soon as we would say this, we would then disqualify ourselves in the view of others, in the sight of others, wouldn't we? Immediately we would be considered, oh, he's somebody who wants to be big. We have to be careful of him. Therefore, we never say this. And the disciples, they were also ashamed of saying it. Therefore, when Jesus asked them, what did you dispute among yourself? They kept quiet, silent. Then he took a little child and set him in the midst of them. First of all, he said, and he sat down, called the 12, and said to them, if anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all men. Then he took a little child and set him in the midst of them. And when he had taken him in his arms, he said to them, whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me. And whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me. What is the quality of a child? Simplicity. What else? Innocence. What else?
Humility.
Humility.
Honest.
Teachable. Willingness to learn, teachable. That is an important point. A child has no difficulty with acknowledging the parents as being superior, normally, does it? I mean, a little child. The daddy knows everything, of course. Mommy knows. Oh, little child, normally. When they grow up and become older and older, and other children then tell them the weaknesses of their parents, and they exchange notes, then the situation begins to change. But normally, there is, in children, this trust of parents. They know more. We can entrust ourselves to them, and we can entrust ourselves to their leadership, definitely.
Sorry for this. No.
I don't know, maybe there's a fuse in there which broke now, because there's no reason why it should not go. Okay, we have 9 minutes left, so let us continue here. What I wanted to turn to next is Desire of Ages, really. I don't know if you have the books with you. Do you have the books, Desire of Ages? Strange, very strange. Okay, the chapter is Who is the Greatest? Chapter 48, and it begins on page 432. It says here, on returning to Capernaum, Jesus did not repair to the well-known resorts where he had taught the people, but with his disciples quietly sought the house that was to be his temporary home. During the remainder of his stay in Galilee, it was his object to instruct the disciples rather than to labor for the multitudes. On the journey through Galilee, Christ had again tried to prepare the minds of his disciples for the scenes before him. He told them that he was to go up to Jerusalem and to be put to death and to rise again. And he added the strange and solemn announcement that he was to be betrayed into the hands of his enemies. The disciples did not even now comprehend his words, although the shadow of a great sorrow fell upon them. A spirit of rivalry found a place in their hearts. They disputed among themselves which should be accounted greatest in the kingdom. The strife they thought to conceal from Jesus, and they did not, as usual, press close to his side, but loitered behind, so that he was in advance of them as they entered Capernaum. Jesus read their thoughts, and he longed to counsel and instruct them, but for this he awaited a quiet hour when their hearts should be open to receive his words. Now let us think about this for a moment. The strife they thought to conceal from Jesus. Can you name the wall that existed here? Yes, jealousy was a wall between them. That is true. But what was the wall between them and Jesus? Yes, concealment. Concealment. They tried to hide. They tried to hide between a wall. Which? Deception. Yes. It says here, as they did not, as usual, press close to his side. So usually they pressed very close to his side. They wanted to walk with him. But now they loitered behind. Now what does the word loiter mean? What is loitering? Yes. Lingering.
Pull back.
Separate.
Not staying.
Yeah, why they loiter, that's another question. What is loitering as such? Yes?
Lingering behind with a purpose.
I checked in the dictionary, and you know what the dictionary says? Suspicious lingering. I find it very interesting. Now, when you have children, and they are always playing and noisy and so forth, and you do your work, you iron, and the children play along, and they are noisy, and it's quite nice. You know what they are doing. But when suddenly everything is quiet, then you wonder what is going on now. Why is it so quiet? Or when you know the door to the children's room is always open, but suddenly it quietly closes. Look, there's a suspiciousness in this quietness and in this closing of the door, isn't there? Why do they do this? They have to conceal something. And when we want to do something that others don't see, what do? We go behind closed doors or somewhere where others don't see it. That is a suspicious lingering. You see, when we have no problem, when we don't do anything wrong, we can be open and free. But when we do something wrong, then we have to close the doors. And why did they loiter behind? Why was there a suspicious lingering? Of course, because they did want to conceal from Jesus what they talked about. Now, that is sad, isn't it? Because we just read the other day in the chapter, Come Rest a While, that the disciples came to Jesus and told him everything. All things they told him. Their favorable and their unfavorable experiences. Their joys in success with the message and also their failures. That they could do this, that they were open enough, that's quite nice, isn't it? But now they did not want to share this with Jesus. In other words, here they built a wall. They built a wall against the Savior. Now let us ask the question again. What is the purpose of that wall? Why did they build this wall? What should it keep out, that wall?
His knowledge of what they were.
It should keep out the Savior. Very clear. What should the wall keep in? Their selfishness, their secrets. Who is the greatest? You know, they indulged in that strife. Who is the greatest? And they didn't want that this strife is taken away from them. Therefore, they built a wall between them and the one who would take it away from them, the strife. And that is a wall that Jesus came to cast down, to break, to destroy. So how did Jesus destroy that wall that now existed between him and the disciples? He asked them the question, what did you talk about? He knew exactly what they had talked about. He asked them, what did you talk? Why did he ask them? Why didn't he say directly, why did you quarrel about who is the greatest?
He asked them because he wanted them to see it themselves, and that's why he
went into the room. Exactly. He wanted that they expressed it themselves, didn't he? It was necessary for them to break down a wall. So he helped them in breaking down a wall. There were no walls from the side of Jesus. Definitely no walls. But there were walls from their side. And these needed to be broken down. So Jesus patiently worked on these walls. And he did this by asking them, what did you quarrel about on the way? Had he directly told them, why did you do this? Why did you quarrel about who is the greatest? You shouldn't have done this. What would he have done? He would make it really thick, isn't it? I've learned this thing, you know, you often have to ask the people rather than to tell them. Ask them, what is your opinion on that matter? And they give you quite a good answer very often. But when you tell them, you should this, you build walls, definitely. Yeah. I find it interesting, today Carolyn was coming to us, and she was asking the question, what do you think we could do better? I thought that was very humble. And it really opened a door, you know? Let's talk about it. What could we do better? We have done this and this and this, and do you see anything that could be improved? And I realized when I took this attitude towards the judge, that is when walls were broken down. I asked him, tell me, what could I have done better? What did I do wrong? You know, he was really challenged to think about it and help me, because I needed help from him. But had I come to him and said, well, you do this and this, I would have made the wall thicker. So that Jesus approached the disciples with a question was a very important point in breaking down the wall. Then they wouldn't answer him, would they? They kept silent. And silence is also a wall. Did Jesus then force them to say something?
No.
He left it with this for the moment. But finally, one asked them, and to this we come later. Okay, we have to close now. And after the study, then we will further look at the story. After the break, I mean, tomorrow we will look further at the story, because there's no other study today. Yes, we have a meeting this evening, but not a study. Do you have any question to this so far?
I want to say that always God uses this, or quite a few times use this method of asking, because even in the Garden of Eden, why did you hide?
Exactly.
Why can't be done?
Exactly.
And because when people say already they feel ashamed, they start to see the game.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow it comes, their conscience helps them to understand that was something silly. You know?
Mm-hmm. You see, when a child has done something wrong, you can go to it and say, what have you done? Why have you done this? You should not have done this, and so forth. Or you can say, tell me, what did you do? Tell me, please tell me. Be open about the matter. Open up.